Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Today is January the 27th, and we are in Yirmiyahu. We are in Perek Beis, Chapter 2. We are up to Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14. But because we didn't finish what we had set out to try to finish last time, we're going to begin with something that took place or was mentioned in an earlier Pasuk, an earlier verse. We're going to go back to Pasuk Zion, verse 7. And we'll read that one, and then we'll go, after we finish discussing this, we'll go back to Yud Dalet to 14. The Pasuk said, Va'avi eschem el eretz ha-karmel, I brought you to the land of Carmel, which means the land of Eretz Yisrael, a fertile land, le'achol piriyah v'tuva, to eat its fruits and its goodness, va'tavau v'titamu es artzi, and you came and you defiled my land, you impurified, you made my land impure, v'nachalasi samtem l'soeva, and my inheritance, my land, you made as an abomination. So you defiled my land. You made my land impure. Now, making land impure doesn't have to literally mean impure as in tuma and tara. It could mean doing averos, transgressing, things of that nature. However, the Gemara Yerushalmi in Maseches Kilayim says a fascinating incident that took place, which I'll read to you. Like every Yerushalmi, the reading is actually not so simple, but we will do our best. And from here we're going to have our discussion that I had mentioned we would have last time about burial in Eretz Yisrael and also using dirt from Eretz Yisrael when burying outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now before I read the story, I want to warn you that the story is going to make us somewhat uncomfortable. And I also will tell you in advance that we know that there is a it is considered meritorious to bury in Eretz Yisrael. We know that. But let's see how the Yerushalmi and Kilayim introduces this idea. The Gemara tells us, it's in the ninth chapter, at the end of Halacha Gimel, the end of the third Halacha. So it says as follows. Rabbi Bar Kirya v'Rabbi Lezer, these are two people, Rabbi Bar Kirya and Rabbi Lezer, Havun Metailin Beistrin, they were traveling, they were walking, they were taking a little stroll in the street. Ro Aronos Shahu Boin Mechutz La'aretz La'aretz. They saw coffins that were coming from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. Now before we read further, let's just understand how that works. Today, if someone passes away outside of Israel, let's say in America, and they want to bury in Eretz Yisrael, so the way that's done is they're flown to Israel. So the body is taken care of here, generally, flown to Israel, and within a matter of hours, the body is already in Israel and can be dealt with there. In addition, when it's transported on a plane, the temperature in the cargo hold is very cold. So there's no issue of the temperature being too warm for someone who is deceased. And besides that, we have dry ice. So we have ways of making sure the body stays in an appropriate manner between here and getting to Israel. When they used to send bodies from Bavel, for example, to Eretz Yisrael, that was traveling over a number of days and often in very hot weather without ice. So it's not a simple matter. In their day, even today it's not a simple matter, but in our day it's much more expedient. In their day it was a very, very difficult task to transport bodies from where they were primarily living, which was Bavel, Babylonia, to Israel. So they saw coffins coming in. There was apparently a caravan of coffins coming to Eretz Yisrael. people to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rebbe Bar Kirya le Rebbe Lezer. So Rebbe Bar Kirya said to Rebbe Lezer, Maho Ilu Elu, what have these people gained by putting in all this effort to be transported from outside of Israel to be buried inside of Israel? What have they gained? I say, Anikora Alam, I read about them. I call the following verse upon them, our verse. V'nachalasi samtem l'soeva b'chayechem, that during your lifetimes, you didn't come to Israel. So during your lifetimes, you made my nachala, you made my land as if it was an abomination. You stayed away from Israel during your lifetime, which means you treated it as if my land was an abomination. Vatavo vatatamu esartzi b'misaschem, and you came and you made my land impure in your death. It's bad enough you didn't come here when you were alive, but now after you've passed away, you've decided now to have the body sent to Israel when there is tumah, when there is impurity. A dead body is tameh, and it makes things around it tameh. So it's bad enough you didn't come when you were alive, but now you decide to send the body after death. So obviously, Rebbe Bar Kirya was not in favor of this practice and speaks negatively about the practice. Amar Lei, Rabbi Lezer responds, Kivan Shein Magian LeEretz Yisrael, once they got to Israel, Hey Notlin Gush Afar, they take a clump of dirt, Umanichin Al Aronon, and they place it on the coffin. Dichsiv, as the verse says at the end of Parshas Ha'azinu in the Chumash, V'chiper admaso amo. His land will atone for his nation. So Rabbi Lezer apparently feels that this practice is a good practice, or at least it's not a negative practice. And regarding the concern of Rabbi Bar Kirya, Rabbi Lezer says, don't worry about it. They managed to correct the problem. And the way they correct the problem is by taking dirt in Eretz Yisrael and placing it on the coffin. That's the end of the Gemara. So, just based on this particular Gemara, it appears that we have a machlokes, or at least a discussion about whether it's appropriate or inappropriate to transport someone who has passed away from outside of Israel to be buried inside of Israel. And Rebbe Bar Kirya says it's inappropriate, and Rabbi Elazar says it's appropriate. There are many other Gemaras that speak of people who had passed away being transported from Bavel to Israel to be buried. This is not the only one, but this is the only one where there's a discussion about it.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I don't know the timing of this discussion. If they were exiled to Babel, then they couldn't come back to Israel.
This discussion is taking place in the time of the Gemara, which was after the destruction of the second temple, and there was at that time caravans going from one place to the other. You find in the time of the Gemara regularly that students traveled back and forth between Israel and Babel. You're right, though, that there was a period of time where it was impossible to do that, but at this time it was possible. So, we have this discussion. So the question is, what are we going to take out of this discussion? We're not going to conclude that there's a problem with burial in Eretz Yisrael, because we have so many other sources that tell us it's a good thing to bury in Eretz Yisrael. But clearly there's something that was bothering Rebbe Bar Kirya, and Rebbe Lezer was trying to make it better with the statement about the taking the dirt and putting it on top of the coffin. So right away, the major commentary on the Yerushalmi, which is the Pnei Moshe, writes that, first of all, Rebbe Bar Kirya was bothered because he knew that these people who were being buried in Eretz Yisrael had the wherewithal to have moved to Israel while they were still alive. And they deliberately didn't do so. They rejected the land while they were still alive. And that compounds the problem, because why make it a place to go after death? Why not make it a place to go while still alive? So we all know that it is considered to be a very meritorious to live in Israel if possible. Not everybody is able to do so, but if one can, it is considered meritorious. And Rabbi Bar Kiryo was saying these people could have easily moved and they didn't. So that's why he criticizes them for being buried in Eretz Yisrael. Just as an aside, there are many sources that state that it is considered a very special zechus, a merit, to die in Israel. That a person who gets there and passes away while in Israel, that's considered to be a great merit for the soul. But these people did not. This is similar to what we have today, very common, that someone passes away outside of Israel and then they're transported to Israel. So then what is bothering Rabbi Bar Kiryo, and what is the response of Rabbi Elazar with the dirt? So there are other commentaries to the Yerushalmi. The Mare HaPanim writes that the issue here is not the burial in Eretz Yisrael. That is meritorious. There's no question that's a good thing. And there's no issue. Rabbi Bar Kiryo wasn't bothered by the burial in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Bar Kiryo was bothered by the fact that you have to take when the coffin enters Eretz Yisrael, it's not immediately put in the ground. You have to transport the body through the land to wherever the graveyard is and bury in the graveyard. Well, during that entire time of transport, which in their day may have still been either a day or two, it may have still taken much time to get from the time they crossed the border into Israel to wherever they're going to bury the body. During all that travel and wherever the body's going to go, there's going to be tumah, there's going to be the impurity that this body is going to be spreading all over the place as it travels through Israel. And that was the issue Rabbi Bar Kiryo was bothered by. He wasn't bothered by the tumah that is there in the graveyard. The graveyard anyway is tameh. As we all know, a kohen is not allowed to enter a graveyard because it's tameh. And no matter how many people are buried in the graveyard, whether it's 100 or 1,000, the kohen can't walk in there. So anyway, it's tameh. You're not increasing tumah by adding another person who has passed away to the same Beis HaKvaros, to the same graveyard. His issue was the transport from the border of Eretz Yisrael through the land to wherever the person is going to be buried. And that was bothering him. He said, look, if you were living in Israel to begin with, if a person was living in Israel to begin with and passed away in Israel, okay, anybody who passes away has to be buried. So, okay, that's what happens. But then these people weren't living here, and now they're going to be transported through the land, bringing tumah with them until they get to the burial spot? That's what was bothering him. So Rabbi Lezer responded with something which is a little bit difficult to understand. He said, look, the verse states, V'chiper ad maso amo, that the land will atone for his nation. And they take a clump of dirt and they place it on the coffin, and that acts as a kapara, that acts as an atonement. That's hard to understand because the dirt doesn't prevent the tumah. Rabbi Bar Kiryo's problem was the tumah, and Rabbi Elazar responds with dirt on top of the coffin. So what is his response? So it seems that Rabbi Lezer is telling us there's something about the dirt of Eretz Yisrael and someone who has passed away. That the dirt of Eretz Yisrael somehow gives an atonement for a person who's passed away for anything that may occur after they've passed away. Meaning, this dirt is not going to help this person who passed away for sins that they, God forbid, may have committed while they were still alive. If the person was a thief and they stole money when they were alive, the dirt, putting it on top of the coffin, is not going to atone for that. He's going to have to deal with that when he gets up to the Beis Din Shalmala, to the court, the heavenly court. He's going to have to deal with his entire life. But here we're dealing with something which happens after he died, and it's just a byproduct of needing to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So that byproduct, which is really a side issue, somehow this dirt provides an atonement for the deceased. And this seems to be, at least partially, the source for the very common practice, which is that when someone is buried outside of Eretz Yisrael, we take dirt that comes from Israel, and that is buried along with the person. We know in Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov Avinu says that I don't want to be buried in Mitzrayim. He makes Yosef swear to take his body up to Israel. Rashi says three reasons why. One is because Yaakov Avinu knew that the Egyptians would turn him into a deity and they would worship him. So he didn't want that. So he said, I want to be transported out of here so they don't do that. That's one. Two was because he had the Nevuah prophecy that in the future the land would be full of kinim, of lice, and they would infest everything, including the dead bodies. And Yaakov Avinu didn't want that, so he asked to be transported. And three, he says, is because of Tzar Gilgal Mechilos, which is that Techias HaMesim, the resurrection of the dead, which we all have a place in that. All of us have a chelik in Olam Haba. We have a portion in the land, in the world to come, which is Tchias HaMesim, which is the resurrection of the dead. When that happens, the place that happens is in Israel. That's where Tchias HaMesim, where the resurrection takes place. But what if a person's not buried in Israel? So the Gemara tells us they need to travel under the ground to Israel and then emerge in Israel. Apparently, this traveling under the ground is not an easy process, even for the one who's deceased. They're not alive anymore, but it's not an easy process. The dirt being, so Yaakov Avinu wanted to avoid that. He wanted to avoid that problem, and he wanted to be buried in Israel. Later, Yosef says, I also want to be buried in Israel, and so do all the other tribes. When they die, they are then buried later. Not right away, not like Yaakov, where it happened right away, but many years later when they leave Egypt. This week's Parsha, Parshas Beshalach, tells us, Vayikach Moshe's Atzmos Yosef Imo, Moshe took with him the bones of Yosef, and they also took the bones of all the tribes, to bury in Israel. Why did Yosef and all the tribes want to be buried in Israel? Well, it's not because they were afraid of being made into an Avodah Zarah, an idolatry. They weren't made into idolatry. Only Yaakov was afraid of that. They weren't. There was no issue for them. They died. They were there while the kinim were there. They were in the ground at the time of the lice. Their being transported to Israel didn't save them from the lice. It was after the lice that they were transported to Israel. So what was their transportation to Israel? What did that help? It only helped for the third thing. For the Gilgal Mechilos. This way they avoided that in the time of Tchias HaMeis, in time of the resurrection, they would not need to travel under the ground to get to Israel. So, what about everybody who's buried outside of Israel? Today we have the wherewithal to bury in Israel, but that was not so for many generations. It wasn't possible. Eastern European Jews could not be buried in Israel. Even the Sephardi Jews living closer to Israel could not be buried in Israel. And even today, it's not necessarily feasible. It's quite expensive to bury in Israel. Certainly more expensive to do it that way than to bury outside of Israel. And so, how do we avoid this tsar, this discomfort of being transported, about traveling under the ground? So the way we avoid that is by putting dirt from Israel in the grave. And we seem to have a tradition that dirt prevents the pain or the discomfort, or at least helps with it, in traveling under the ground to get to Israel. The idea seems to be that the dirt from Israel is somehow connected to Israel, and therefore it enables the process of getting this body back to Israel when the time comes before the resurrection. That's what it seems to be. And the source of that seems to be this Gemara that I read to you, that Rabbi Lezer says, the clump of dirt of Israel atones and helps the one who is deceased. That seems to be the source. I'll just tell you as a digression for a moment that some of you may have been involved in doing a tahara, that's preparing a body for burial. It is it's a big mitzvah to do. It's also a very good experience. So if a person can do it, we hope nobody dies, of course, but if someone needs to be tended to, it is a wonderful mitzvah to do. And it is a good experience for someone to have. Before I left Baltimore, I was trying to get as much shimush, as much experience as I could in all types of things. And one of the things I wanted to do was to be involved in a tahara. I called the head of the Chevra Kadisha of the Aguda in Baltimore, Mr. Nelkin. And he said, I'd like to get experience in this area. So could I come along next time there is a tahara to be done? So he said to me two things. He said, first of all, if you come, then you must participate. He said, it's not a spectator's sport. If you're there, he said, it's not kavod hames, it's not honor, it's not respectful to the deceased to stand there and watch. If you're there, you help. I said, okay. I'm naturally queasy, so I was a little bit nervous, but he said, don't worry, you'll be involved, you'll be fine. And the second thing he said to me is, he said, if, God forbid, someone passes away, then I'll let you know. As he didn't take it as a given that someone is for sure going to pass away. If someone happens to pass away, then I'll let you know. And I did go along the next time there was somebody, and it is something that is a really special thing to do. The dirt, now you know that with a tahara, men do tahara for a man and women do for a woman. And there's a lot that has to do with minhag, with custom. So I can't tell you the process when they do a tahara for a woman. I obviously only did for a man. But the dirt, the way that works is after the body is prepared, what they do is they clean the body and then they dress the body with the tachrichim, with the shrouds, and then they place the body in the coffin, and then that's over, they're finished. There's someone who's there as a shomer to say Tehillim and watch the body until it's time for burial. After they have completed cleaning the body and dressing the body, and they place the body in the coffin, right before they place the body in the coffin, they take out, these days, of course, everything is all set up for you. So they have packets of dirt that they have from Israel, and they open up a packet and they spread dirt on the coffin and inside the coffin and place the body down on top of the dirt. That's what they do. The shrouds that stay clean and they just put them on top of the dirt. And then there are different customs of where to pour the dirt as well. So it seems to be that dirt is poured on the eyes. The eyes are closed, but that the dirt is poured on the eyes. And then there are different customs for where else to pour dirt over the deceased. But that is the dirt from Eretz Yisrael. It's the dirt from Israel. And it seems that the source is this Gemara. At least one of the sources is this Gemara that we just read about the dirt atoning for the person and therefore assisting in this transportation or this traveling under the ground to Israel for Tchias HaMesim, for resurrection of the dead. You see why we didn't cover it last time? That took 25 minutes this time. Anybody have any questions on this part before we move on to the next section of Yirmiyahu?
Yes, so sorry. And you may have said this, I was 4 minutes late because I actually was paying a shiva call for someone who just buried their parent in Israel. Yes, literally, and I actually watched, it's what you're saying is so fascinating because I did watch the funeral in Eretz Yisrael, and I have never seen a body buried in Eretz Yisrael before. I've only been to local ones, so that whole thing was moving, I guess is a good way to say. Anyway, could you please just remind me back to how this tied into your reality?
Yeah.
That part I forgot.
It tied in because in Pasuk Zion, verse 7, it said that I brought you to the land and you defiled it. You made it Tameh. So we read that Gemara that he had said that those who were being transported through the land for burial, they were making the land Tameh. And the way that they atoned for it was by putting dirt on top of the coffin.
Thank you.
Right. I just want to show the point because Mrs. Callis brought it up that that in Israel they don't use a coffin. They bury directly into the ground. The body is wrapped up, but directly in the ground. We consider it better for the deceased to be in contact with the dirt. And that's why in America, where a coffin must be used, we use a plain pine box, which will deteriorate quickly and the dirt will touch the body quickly. That is considered to be better for the deceased to be in contact with the dirt. So in Israel, that's possible. That is what is done. Yes, next question.
I was under the impression that the way that the Jews contaminated the land was way back with the idolatry and those types of things.
You are correct. That is certainly the simple meaning of the pasuk. That's the simple meaning. But the Gemara is using the pasuk a little differently, and that's why we launched into this discussion. Any other questions?
I do have a question.
Yeah.
They now are advertising there'll be a building that is going to house people's bodies in Jerusalem. Because they've land run out of land, how will they? Will religious people allow that for themselves?
I assume if it's in Jerusalem that it's going to be for religious people. I don't know how they do it. There are halachic ways of connecting the above ground burials to the ground, and what they're essentially doing is they're extending the ground up. They're making the ground higher. That's really what they're doing, and they're doing it in a halakhically acceptable way. But I'm not familiar enough with how that's done. But I know that there are ways of doing that.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to move on. We're in Perek Beis, chapter 2. Go ahead. Are you trying to...
Am I audible?
Now you are, yes.
I have a question. I started asking within it. It's so interesting. Thank you. So it's interesting because the Malach HaMavos comes, that brings Tumah, and then it's saying that you brought the Tumah. Now, that person most likely didn't decide that they should die. And so it's such a strong statement that we're saying that death, you're bringing Tumah around with death.
Yeah, so the way the Gemara sees...
Right? In effect, that's what it is. Right?
Yeah, yeah, the way the Gemara seems to be saying it is that the tumah of death is inevitable, but don't spread it around. His criticism was just bury in the place where the person died so it doesn't get spread around. That was his criticism, and the response was the dirt of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, Pasuk Beis, Perek Beis, chapter 2, Pasuk Yadal, verse 14. So we continue, Hashem says, Ha'eved Yisrael, im yelid bayesu, is Yisrael a slave? Are they born in the house? Born in the house here is a reference to born to a slave. Are the Jews slaves? Why are they behaving this way? Madua hayalavaz, why are they behaving in a manner that is beneath their dignity? They're above this. They shouldn't be behaving in this way as we continue with the criticism of the Jews. Why are they behaving in a manner that is not exalted, the way Jews should be behaving? Now I'm going to come back to the first word in this verse, ha'eved. We're going to come back to that soon. That's going to be the grammatical point I wanted to make, but let's read a few more verses. Pasuk Tezva, verse 15. Alav yishagu chefirim. About him, about the Jews, the lions will roar. Nasnu kolam, they will give their voices. That means foreign kings will come and attack. That's a lion. A lion is a reference to a king. Vayashisu artso lishama, they will make his land desolate. Arav nitzesumi bliyoshev, his cities will again be desolate or destroyed with no one dwelling there. Gam bnei Nof v'sach panches, also those who live in Nof and Sach Panches. Nof and Sach Panches were two of the major cities in Egypt. So also those two cities of Egypt, Yiruch Kadkod, Kadkod means the skull or the head. Yiruch means to smash it. They will smash you on the head. They will attack you. Right now, the Jews were looking, we're going to learn about this later, that in the time of Yirmiyahu, the Jews were looking towards Egypt for help as an alliance to help them against other foreign powers. And Yirmiyahu was warning them that you're going to get double-crossed. The Egyptians are actually going to attack you. Halozos ta'aselach. This is what happens to you. This is why it happens. Azveches Hashem Elokayich. You forsook Hashem, your God. Of course this is going to happen to you. You went away from Hashem. Be'es molichech badarech, when he was leading you on the road. He was giving you the direction. He told you how to behave. He told you how to live. He told you how to have a good life. And you left him. So of course this is going to happen to you. V'atah, and now, malach l'derech Mitzrayim. Why do you want to go on the road to Egypt? Lishtos mei shichar, to drink the waters of shichar. Shichar is another name for the Nile River. What do you want to go to Egypt and drink water from the Nile? Umalach l'derech Ashur. Why do you want to go on the road to Assyria? Lishtos mei nahar, to drink the water of the river, of the river Paras, of the Euphrates. What do you want to go drink water over there for? Why don't you want to be in Israel? Tiasreich, Raaseich, your evil has led you astray. Umishuvosayich tochichuch, and your rebelliousness has given you punishment. Udi'i uri'i ki rav amar, know and see that it is bitter and evil. Azveiches Hashem elokayich, that you left Hashem your God. V'lofach dasi elayich, and my fear is not upon you. Neum Hashem tzvakos, says Hashem tzvakos. All right, let's pause here. And so we see the tone of the criticism. This is a continuation of what we saw last week in the criticism of Yirmiyahu as he goes on. I want to pause because I want to present to you, it's a digression. But I want to present to you that word. Actually, I've changed my mind. I think I'm going to continue because I don't want to lose the flow of the psukim. I'm going to come back to that word I mentioned at the end. Let's move on now so that we keep the flow of the verses. Pasuk Chav, verse 20. Ki me'olam shavarti uleich. Because for always in the past, what did I do for you, says Hashem? I broke your yoke when you were under the yoke of others. I broke that yoke. I set you free. Nitakti mosrosayich. I split your chains, that which bound you. I broke them open. And I made you free. Vatomri lo evor. And you said, I will not transgress. When I freed you from bondage, you said, I commit to serving Hashem. I will not transgress. But what actually happened? Kial kol giva givoha, because on all high hills, v'sachas koleitz ra'anan, and all under all spreading trees, beautiful trees, at tso'a zona. You are tso'a zona. Now, zona means a prostitute. Tso'a is the language used when one sets an area to sleep, like making a bed. That's called tso'a. So you are tso'a zona, acting as a prostitute. Now here, as we mentioned before, it is very, very common throughout Tanakh that idolatry is compared to a prostitute, or really to adultery, because as a woman goes to another man, leaving her husband, so if we, God forbid, serve Avodah Zarah, idolatry, we are leaving our, so to speak, husband, that is Hashem, and going to what is considered to be as if it's another man, to Avodah Zarah, to idolatry. And that's why, therefore, this imagery is used throughout Tanakh to mean that it actually starts in the Chumash itself. It doesn't start in the Navi. Moshe Rabbeinu himself uses this analogy. Pasuk Chaval, verse 21. Vanochi nitatich sorek. I planted you as a sorek. A sorek means a vine, like as a grapevine, a beautiful grapevine. Kulo zera emes. All, literally this means true seed. It means seed that will definitely flower, that will definitely produce fruit. Ve'eich ne'pacht li, and how could you have turned for me, surei ha'gefen nachriya. This vine that is turned away to be a foreign vine, to be one that is not producing, that is not doing what it was planted to do. The word sorek, look carefully at that word in Hebrew, spelled sin, vav, resh, kuf. What is the gematria of the word sorek? Sin is 300, vav is 6, resh is 200, kuf is 100. 300 plus 6 plus 200 plus 100 is 606. We know that we have taryag mitzvos, we have 613 mitzvos. We know that the Bnei Noach, the rest of the world, has 7 mitzvos. We also had 7 mitzvos before we were given the Torah. When we got the Torah, we were given an additional 606 mitzvos, for a total of 613 mitzvos. I planted you sorek. I gave you an extra 606 mitzvos. I gave you more mitzvos. And you, instead, you became foreign to me. You didn't perform those mitzvos. The Yirmiyahu is emphasizing the additional 606. What is this idea of getting extra mitzvos? The rest of the world has 7, we have 613. On the one hand, if you have 613 mitzvos, that's a lot of mitzvos to do. That sounds good. On the other hand, if you have more mitzvos to do, it also means, God forbid, more opportunities to mess up and more sins one could actually do. So, is it better to have more or less? Clearly, it's better to have more. But why is it better to have more? If you have 7 mitzvos, you can be really perfect in those 7 and really excel. If you have 613, it's really difficult to get them all right. Now, truth be told, of the 613 mitzvos of the Torah, many of them are not applicable today. We don't have 613 mitzvos that we can perform today. Many of those mitzvos have to do with the Beis HaMikdash. Many of those mitzvos have to do with living in Israel. Many of those mitzvos are simply not accessible to us today. Still, even today, there are certainly dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of mitzvos that are relevant to us, and that sets us apart and makes us different than the rest of the world. But why is that better? There's a famous passage in the Mishnah, which you may be familiar with, which is said frequently in Shul before they say Kaddish, and that passage is Rav Chananya ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lezakos Es Yisrael. Hashem wanted to give merit to the Jewish people. Lefikach hirba lahem Torah u'mitzvos. Therefore, he increased for them Torah and mitzvos. Hashem wanted to increase merit for us. Therefore, he increased for us Torah and mitzvos. What is that passage saying? That passage is saying the following. We are here in this world. We are here for the purpose of perfecting ourselves, perfecting the world around us. We're here for the purpose of connecting to Hashem, for the purpose of being Mar Bekvod Shamayim, bringing out the honor of heaven. That's why we're here. And ultimately, as we do what we are supposed to do, we grow closer to Hashem. We do that through the mitzvos. The mitzvos are the vehicle through which we come close to Hashem, perfect ourselves, perfect the world, and reach shlemus and get and do what we need to do here. Hashem wanted that to be something that is accessible for us. Seven mitzvahs are beautiful, and those seven mitzvahs are important. But if there's only seven mitzvahs, you don't have the opportunity to do a mitzvah all the time. It's hard to find mitzvahs to do if you only have seven. If you have 613, you can literally grab mitzvahs. Grab a mitzvah here, grab a mitzvah there. Chatof mitzvah, grab a mitzvah, the Gemara says. Grab this mitzvah, grab that mitzvah, do this mitzvah, do that mitzvah. We have mitzvahs all over the place. And if we don't have a Torah mitzvah, we have a rabbinic mitzvah all the time. How many brachos did you make today? How many did you make? Dozens and dozens of brachos. Baruch ata Hashem, Elokeinu melech ha'olam. Every time you make a bracha, you get a mitzvah. And if you say it with kavana, you say it with intent, you get a better mitzvah. There are so many mitzvahs around. How many times did we do a chesed today for somebody? How many times did we refrain from speaking something that was inappropriate today? That's a mitzvah. There are so many mitzvahs. Every time we daven, every time we do any kind of mitzvah of the Torah, you ate kosher food. You're doing a mitzvah by avoiding eating non-kosher food. By being careful in your kitchen, separating between meat and milk, you are doing a mitzvah every time you do that. There are so many mitzvahs that we can grab. And Hashem wanted to make that easier for us to reach Him, to be able to achieve Him. What about my question though? If there's so many mitzvahs one can do, that means there are so many averos that one could transgress. Because any time a person doesn't do the mitzvah properly, isn't that an avera? And at least one approach to this is that we know mitzvah goreres mitzvah. One mitzvah leads to another mitzvah. Hashem scattered mitzvahs all around us. As the famous analogy of the gems all over the place, a person can just grab those gems. When you grab one, you grab another, and then you want to grab a third, and then you want to grab a fourth, and then a fifth, and you want to grab a whole bunch, and you start just piling them on. And mitzvos do that. Once a person gets into mitzvos, then they have an insatiable appetite for mitzvos. And that's the way Hashem wanted it to be. That we be pursuing mitzvos all the time, and He didn't want it to be difficult for us to find the mitzvos to pursue. Therefore, He says, I gave you an extra 606 mitzvos, a total of 613, that you should be able to find mitzvos wherever and whenever you are. All the time, at any moment, you should be able to grab mitzvos. And this is the special merit that we have. Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu lezakos es Yisrael. Hashem wanted to give merit to the Jewish people. And therefore He gave us more Torah and more mitzvos. Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22. That's a very inspiring message, but still remember, Yirmiyahu is primarily going to be criticism, and we continue in that vein. Chaf Beis 22. Kim Tachamsi Baneser. Because even if you were to wash with soap, Neser is a type of soap, one that's very abrasive. Visarbi lach boris, and you'll increase for yourself boris. Boris is another type of soap. Nichtam avonech lefanai, your sin is still stained before me. Numa Hashem Elokim, says Hashem. Eich tomri lo nitmesi, how could you say I didn't defile, I didn't do sins? Acharei avealim lo halachti, I didn't go after the idolatry. How could you say that? Ri'i darkech bagai, see your way in the valley. That's a reference to the sin of Baal Peor that was performed, that was the sin that was done by the Jewish people at the end of the 40 years in the wilderness. Di'i me'asis, know what you did. Bichro kala, misareches diracheha. I am not an expert in wildlife. I happen to have a brother who is a zoologist, and he could probably speak to this matter. But evidently, a female camel can be very difficult to tame. Again, I can't speak to the idea, but that apparently is the case. And a bichra here refers to a female camel. Kala means like the word kal, which means a leniency or to be light. It means to be like lightheaded or to not care. You're like an uncaring female camel, misareches derachecha, that clings to its ways, not wanting to be controlled by anybody, not wanting to have any type of rules, just wanting to do whatever it wishes. Pere limud midbar. It is used to being in the wilderness, just being wild in the wilderness. Be'avas nafsha sha'af haruach. In the desire of its soul, it draws in breath. It draws in breath. It's the whole world belongs to this creature. Do whatever it wants. Ta'ana sa mi yeshivena, its waywardness, who will make it stop? Kol mevaksha lo yi'afu, all those who try to seek it out, try to grab it, they will not be able to. Literally, this means they will not tire. This is, we'll see in a minute, it means just the opposite. They'll become very tired. Bechadsha yimtzaunha, in its month, they will catch it. Kol mevaksha lo yi'afu, all those who seek it will not tire. Rashi says, they're not going to bother chasing after it. It runs so fast, and it's so difficult to tame, they're not going to bother trying. They're just going to forget about it. However, bechadshayim tsa'unha, there is in its month, they will catch it. In its month, they will get it. So Rashi tells us, I'll read you the Rashi. Rashi says, Chodesh echad yesh bashana, there is one month in the year, shehi yeshena kol hachodesh, that it sleeps the entire month. Evidently, it's either it hibernates. I don't think camels hibernate, but I think it means that it's less energetic during that time. Va'az hi milkida, and then it can be captured. In that one month, that's when it can be captured. So those who are trying to capture it are going to say, "We're not going to bother. We'll wait to get it in that month." Afatem, also you, chodesh echad muchan lachem kvar. Miyamos hamaraglim. There is one month that is prepared for you already from the days of the spies. Shakavu avosechem bechiyas chinam, that your ancestors established a crying for no purpose. Bo silkadu, that's the month in which you will be captured, the month of Av. The infamous month of Av, when both of the Bate Mikdashos, both the temples were destroyed. So here we have a reference to that, that there is a month in which we are vulnerable, and that is the month of. You are probably aware of the halacha. It is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. This is not some agadic statement somewhere. This is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that if a Jew has a court case with a non-Jew, then it is scheduled for the month of, if at all possible, it should be delayed. It should be pushed off. And don't go to court in the month of Av. In that month, Jews are vulnerable and it should be pushed off. If possible, the best month to have such a case would be in Adar. In Adar, we say, Mishanichnas Adar, Mar Bim B'Simcha, we increase our joy in Adar, and which is coming up in 2 weeks, I forgot to mention tonight, is Tu B'Shvat. But for Av, Mishanichnas Av, Mematin B'Simcha, we reduce our joy in Av. That's the month that is referenced over here. I'm debating to read a little bit further, so I won't have time. Okay, let's go a little further here. Mini Raglech Miachef, prevent your feet from being barefoot, meaning from having to go into exile with nothing. When people go into exile, it's not a trip that they can pack for. They're just dragged into exile. And often the shoes wear out, they can't replace their shoes. So hold your feet back from being barefoot. It's also a reference to being in mourning, to not being able to wear shoes. Ugronech mitzama, and your throat from being thirsty. Hold back from that. Don't sin and have to deal with these consequences. Vatomri noash, and instead you said, "I don't care." Lo, no. Ki ahavti zarim. I have loved the foreignness, this being with foreign entities. Ve'achayrehem eleich, and I want to run after them. You've rejected all the warnings of the prophets. Kevoshes ganov ki imatsei, like the shame of a thief when he is caught. You're caught red-handed. Kain hovishu beis Yisrael, so the Jews have been embarrassed, have been shamed. Hema, malchehem, sarehem, them, their kings, their officers, v'chohanehem, and their kohanim, unevihem, and their nevi'im, all the leaders of the Jewish people, are equally shamed for this. We're going to read two more verses and stop. Omrim la'etz avi ata, those who say to the tree, you are my father, a reference to worshipping idolatry. V'lo evan, they say to the stone, at yelidatani, you bore me, you brought me into this world. Ki fanu elai oref v'lo fanim, they have turned their back to me, they are not facing me, says Hashem. Uve'esra sam yomru, but then when their bad times come, when they have difficult times, then they say, kumavo shienu, Hashem, get up and save us. Hashem says, this is the ultimate hypocrisy, that as long as things are good, the Jews, they're wayward, they do their things, they don't care, and then when things start going bad, they say, oh, Hashem, help us, help us. Hashem says, where were you when things were good? How come you didn't speak to me then? And Hashem says, the ultimate slap in the face, Chavches, 28, where are the gods that you made for yourselves? All this time you were worshipping other gods. Where are those gods to save you? Yakumu, let them get up. Im yoshiyucha be'esra asecha. Let's see if they help you in the time of your need, time of when things are going bad for you. Ki mispar arecha hayu alohecha Yehuda, because your foreign gods, Yehuda, equal the amount of cities that you have. You have foreign gods for all of the cities that you have. That verse is the second to last verse of the Haftorah of the second of the 3 weeks. I had mentioned to you that we are reading now the Haftorah of the second of the 3 weeks. It ends there. It doesn't end there. There's one more verse, but we skip ahead to get to the other verse. In other words, when reading it in Shul, the Haftorah stops here and then jumps ahead for one more verse. And that's because we don't want to end with a negative thought. We want to end with something positive. Even if the Haftorah is criticism, but still, the Haftorah should always, everything should always end on a positive note. And therefore, we skip ahead from here on Shabbos of the Haftorah, and we read one verse that is positive, which we'll come to later on. Bli Neder, I will point it out to you when we get to it, probably next week. We're going to end off now with something which is just a totally different idea, which is so interesting. Going back to Pasuk Yud Dalet, verse 14, and this will be the last discussion of the evening. The verse says, Ha'eved Yisrael, is Yisrael a slave? Look carefully at the Hebrew word Ha'eved. The hey is a prefix. The word for slave, as we know, is Eved. We say it every morning, Shalom Asani Eved, Hashem, you didn't make me a slave. The hey is a prefix. Normally, the prefix hey means the. Like hashulchan or habayis, the table, the house, haTorah, the Torah. Normally, the hey in the front of the word is the. Sometimes, hey in the front of the word, the prefix hey, can mean question mark. Ha'eved does not mean the slave. It means is he a slave? Ha'eved Yisrael. Is Yisrael a slave? The same way that we would write a question mark at the end of a question, in Tanakh, in Biblical Hebrew, a hey is placed in the front of the question, and it connotes a question. Ha'eved Yisrael, is Yisrael a slave? That's the way that phrase is read. And that's noted because of the hey. How do you know if the hey is the, or if it's question mark? How do you know the difference? Maybe this means the Jewish slave, Ha'eved Yisrael. So the answer is this. Sometimes, if it would be the, then the nekuda, the vowel under the hay, would be a komatz, not a patach. In this case, if it would mean the slave, it would be ha-eved, with a komatz under the hay. But because it's a patach under the hay, it's ha-eved. When the person reading it in the Haftorah on that Shabbos, the second of the 3 weeks, if he would read this ha-eved Yisrael, then he would need to be corrected, because that's a different meaning. Ha-eved Yisrael means the slave Yisrael. Ha-eved Yisrael means, is Yisrael a slave? That's the difference over here, and it's important to pronounce it correctly and say ha-eved rather than ha-eved. Now, sometimes this is a little bit confusing. Sometimes the even when it means the, it's pronounced ha. Like I mentioned before, ha-shulchan, the table, is ha, even though it's the. You don't say ha-shulchan, you say ha-shulchan. Now, it's far beyond the scope of this class to discuss when it would be ha and ha for the. But in that situation, how would you know whether it means the table or table? How do you know the difference? The answer in that case is that if it's the table, it's a patach, ha-shulchan. If it's table, question mark, then it's a chataf patach. The chataf patach is the a with the two dots next to it. It's still pronounced ha, but it's an a with the two dots next to it. That's a little bit complex for this particular discussion, but a reason I bring it up to you is because there's a very, very famous question in the Chumash that we all know. A song has been written about it. Many, many songs have been written about it. Every child comes home from school with this. We all know this question in the Chumash. It occurs in Parshas Vayigash. And we all know about it. And it's often mispronounced. Yosef says to his brothers when he reveals himself, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef. Ha'od avi chai? Is my father still alive? How do we know that's a question? Because of the hey. Ha'od avi chai. Is my father still alive? Very often, it's pronounced ha'od avi chai. That is a mispronunciation, as we now have learned. If one says ha'od avi chai, it means, I don't know what it means. The father, the now, I'm not even sure how it would work. But the proper pronunciation there is ha'od avi chai. Is my father still alive? Question mark. That's how you know it's a question, because of the hey with the ah sound in front of the word od. That is like the question mark at the end of the sentence in English. In biblical Hebrew, you put that hey with the ah sound in front of the phrase, and that connotes the question. Any questions?
That is confusing, though, because the Torah has no vowels under it.
Correct.
So Eliezer's time when he makes the vowels, the Hebrew language.
The vowels were given at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu knew the vowels, but they're not written in. But you're correct. You have to know it. It's not written into the Torah.
So when the Hebrew was put into language that we can use today, how is that handled?
The vowels were not made up. The vowels were given to Moshe at Har Sinai. It's just the symbols that were made up.
You mean the
chop
symbols?
And the vowel symbols. Now, it's which symbol would be ah, which symbol would be ah, which symbol would be ooh. Those were made up, but the sounds were not made up. They were given to Moshe at Har Sinai.
So when we lost all those burnings of the Talmud over the many hundreds of centuries, how was that carried forward that people still knew?
They memorized it. Torah Shebaal Peh, Torah is supposed to be, this section, that part of the Torah is supposed to be memorized. We can't hold it all in our heads anymore, but they did. They were able to.
Rabbi, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions before we sign off?
Yeah, I'm curious about, in Pasuk Chav Zion, it says, and then you're going to say, Kuma Bahushienu. So why is it that really that is part of our davening, and we say that if, you know, like, It's saying, okay, you're going to be do bad, and then you're going to say, save us.
Yeah, good, good, good. Yeah, you're referring to that in the davening we say kuma voshino sometimes, but that's not quoting this pasuk. There are other psukim in Tanakh, more positive ones, that use the phrase kuma voshino. So the question which you can ask, which I don't have an answer for, is why is the same phrase used in the negative and in the positive? That's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi.
The recording, it's going to take a little while to get the recording out because I don't have the internet access now.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.